All right, welcome back. Our next speaker is Christine Tasson. Christine is a professor at Sorbonne University. She does research at the intersection of computer science, mathematics, logic, and more specifically, denotational semantics of prosthetic programming languages, programming languages in general, distributed systems, and in particular in prosthetic programming languages. She's one of the leading experts in this question of denotational semantics, and she was the program chair for LAFI last year. She will be again this year. And she's a participant in the French ENR prosthetic programming semantics. She will talk today about denotational verification of prosthetic programming. Welcome, Christine.
Thank you for the introduction, and thank you, Xavier and Jean-Baptiste, for organizing this great event. I'm very happy to be here. Okay, so the purpose of this talk is to make an introduction to semantics, especially for probabilistic programming. So the objectives are to see what is semantics, what kind of properties we can prove, why semantics for probabilistic programming can be hard, especially when there is higher order in place. And I will also present some models and applications, but among many other models and applications. Okay, so semantics is a key tool for designing programming languages, but also for formalization and proof of programs, all through the continuum from machine code to high-level programming languages. And yesterday we have seen many talks where semantics were used to formalize programs by mathematical objects that allows us to prove, to have tools, mathematical tools to study the programs. So for instance, here I have a really simple program, which is just tossing a coin, a bias coin, and I want to associate to this program a mathematical object, which is a function that takes the bias, p, and that returns the probability distribution over 0 and 1. Okay? So denotational semantics does that automatically, takes the syntax, the text, and produces the mathematical object. But when you have a model, a semantics, you can look at the structure inside and recognize some computational content and introduce it as construction, new syntax, and invent, design new programming languages. So there are so many examples, but perhaps the most famous one is the introduction of function in programming languages. So it's come back to Church and the introduction of lambda calculus as one of the first models for computability, but it took about decades to come into real programming languages. So like in the 70s, there were some functions like procedures, but there were dynamic scopes, so it was not really corresponding to the nowadays thinking of functional programming. So now, even in Python, you have the lambda, even in Excel, as we have seen yesterday. But what I really like in programming languages is the affiliation with the denotational semantics. So for instance, in Haskell, you have the monads. Monads allows you to structure functional programming, but you don't really need to know whatever categorical monad is to use it. And programmers do not need that. But still, there is the roots of this language. At the really beginning, there was this idea of categorical monad. My other preferred example is the categorical abstract machine in OCaml, which was the first abstract machine that was implemented and that allowed you to evaluate your programs. So of course, now in OCaml, you don't use the categorical abstract machine. It was replaced by the sync abstract machine, thanks to Xavier, and all the community have changed the language. But still, at the beginning, it was this story of Cartesian closed categories and so on that was in place. So I'm not sure if the people that design Excel was studying categories theory when they add lambda in it, but it's still a hard question to understand what are the meaning of programs when there is lambdas, higher order, compositionality, and so on. Okay, so what kind of question can we study with semantics? So we have here two really simple programs, and I want to know if they are equivalent. So there is this construction sample, which takes a D, which is a program representing a probability distribution. So on the left-hand side, I sample my distribution, I get an outcome, and I test twice if it's zero, and according to the result, I return 1, 2, or 3. On the right-hand side, I store my distribution, and then I sample it twice, and according to the result, I return 1, 2, or 3. So, what do you think? Are they equivalent or not? No, they are not equivalent, because if you compute the operational semantics, if you evaluate the program, you will see that you have different execution traits that will lead to, for instance, here you will never have 2 appearing, but here you will have 2 appearing with probability 1/2. Okay, what's the difference? The difference is here I evaluate my sample my distribution only once, and then I test something which is not changing. But on the right-hand side, I copy my distribution several times, so I have independent, identically distributed random variables that are sampled. Okay, so when I mix some programs with effects like probability, the meaning can be difficult to understand. Here it's a very, very simple, but if I mix that with higher order and so on, it's becoming harder to understand if 2 programs are the same or not. So to answer this question of behavioral equivalence, so here left and right are not the same, they are not behaving the same. That means that in any context, they are not. There are some contexts where they give a different answer. So to answer this question of equivalence, I can use operational or denotational semantics. So I take an ideal programming language, which is just standard lambda calculus with recursion and some discrete probability. So I have a bias coin, a Bernoulli distribution that I can sample. It's a simple typed programming language, and on it I want to study how I compute my programs. And for this I use this transition system, which is labeled with the probability P. So this can be read as P is the probability that M evaluates to M prime in one step of computation. I also want to study the denotational semantics, which is associating to a program M, which is type of type A in a context gamma. I want to associate to it a morphism, a kind of function from the interpretation of the parameters to the interpretation of the outcome. The main property that I need is the soundness. That means that the denotational semantics corresponds to the operational one. If I reduce, if I want to compute the denotational semantics of M, I can just reduce it, use the semantics of M prime, multiplied by the probability that M reduces to M prime. Usually, we also have an adequation lemma that says that semantics, the two semantics, operational and denotational one, are the same at the ground types. So for any closed term of type NAT, the distribution computed by the denotational semantics over integer corresponds to the distribution that M reduces in as many steps as needed to an integer. Okay, so there is the probabilistic Courant spaces, which is a semantics of this, a denotational semantics of this language. And it is a generalization of Cousin measurable semantics, where we interpret a program of type NAT as a random databases that associate to any possible outcome a probability. Now we have to think of programs, M, which is typed of type A in context gamma, and it will be interpreted as a transformer of random databases. So it takes the databases, the random databases interpreting the context, the parameters, and its outcome random databases for all, about the type of the outcome. Okay. So what is important here is how we can formalize the semantics of these search programs, and we can see that they are interpreted as series. Let's have a look at the two programs. So left is taking a probability distribution that can be seen as a random variable or as a random databases, and it will outcome a random databases. And what we see here is that the coefficient, the probability to outcome one or three, is a linear function in the argument. But for right, you see that the arguments are polynomials of degree two, and this is related to the fact that we sampled it twice. We copied our random distribution before sampling. Okay, so we already knew that probabilistic random spaces is sound and adequate to this probabilistic, this higher order language with probabilities. But with my colleague Thomas Erhard and Michele Pagani, we show that it also characterizes exactly behavioral equivalence. So because the two semantics are different, we know that they have different behavior. Okay, but for continuous probability, we can generalize this semantics. So I take the same language, but I replace the discrete probability with continuous probability. And it's also typed. I have the right to sample a probability distribution, to produce new probability distribution out of measurable functions. The operational semantics now is a stochastic kernel that takes the set of programs endowed with a sigma algebra, which is just you take the sigma algebra of Borelian and you generalize it to two terms. So you have to think to proba MU as the operational semantics that allows you to produce, to compute M and to see what is the probability that M will reduce inside U, which is a measurable set of terms. Okay, so we can describe the measure semantics at first order. Then M, which is typed of type A in the context gamma, is also a stochastic kernel that will transform the measure over gamma to a measure over A. And as an example, if I sample air, I take X and I plug it in P, I will compute the distribution that I get with an integral of the probability distribution associated to P. So we really need measurable function to be able to integrate this, to compute this integral. Again, we have the soundness, but now we replace the sum by this integral, and we have the adequacy. That means that at the ground type, the two semantics are in correspondence. Okay. So, I have described semantics for a programming language with first-order functions and with some probabilities. But I have not spoken from now on of probabilistic programming. We need to add some observations, some inference, and so on. So I won't come back to what is probabilistic programming language. We just recap that programs are described are used to describe statistical models, and inference is used to compute the distribution of a parameter to adapt a model to the data. And inference is embedded in the compiler so that the programmer has just to describe models as programs. So there are lots of probabilistic programming languages, but the heart of such a language is just a usual language with perhaps conditional loops, perhaps functions, and perhaps higher order. And there are these probabilistic primitives, and the fact that we can compare our model with some data and infer parameters. Okay, what are the questions that we can answer by knowing the meaning, the semantics of probabilistic programs? We can try to know what is the probability of determination, if a program describes the right model, or what is the speed of convergence, and can we distinguish two programs? Okay, so the semantics of probabilistic programs is a little bit different because we really relies on simulation. So here, let's think of this Galton board with this marble going through the board. And it is described by this program, Plinko, which is just describing the run of one marble in going through the board. The semantics, the denotational semantics of this program is the distribution, the probabilistic distribution. So it's kind of ideal because we won't be able to compute it exactly. What we will be able to compute, and this will be the operational semantics, is a simulation using Monte Carlo. So the semantics of this program will be kind of an array of samples. So we have to choose the size of the array, how many samples we want to do, and we will have to sample this program as many times as needed to fill this array. So this is very important. The interpretation of a program ideally is a probability distribution, but its operational semantics that we compute is an array of samples. Okay, so the distribution can be computed compositionally for small blocks. We can also add recursion and loops by using fixed points and so on. Okay, but now I need to speak of conditioning and of inference. So perhaps you know this little experiment where you want to compute p, and you have rice grains, and you have a square, and you drew a circle on it, and you just uniformly spread your grains on this square, and now you just have to count how many grains were on the inside the disk out of all the grains. Okay, so I try to reflect this experiment as a program. So first, I describe what is a uniform distribution over a square, like this. And now, the usual thing is to use rejection sampling. While I am not inside the disk, I continue to sample. Okay, and I stop when I get something inside the disk. So again, I will sample it many times to have a good approximation of a uniform distribution over the disk. Now, if I want to use the probabilistic programming paradigm, I will just add this observation, which says that keep among all the samples, keep only the ones that will fall inside the disk. Okay, so observe conditions the output distribution to the disk, and the inference allows you to approximate the distribution satisfying the condition. In your array, you only keep the one that satisfy the condition. So rejection sampling is one example of inference algorithm that allows you to compute this array. Okay, so but it's not adapted to every problem. So let's have a look at this problem, which was studied by Laplace in the 18th century. And the remark is that in the recording of births, there was some bias. Less female were recorded in the birth record. So Laplace was asking the question, is there a cause for that, or is it by chance? So he took some hypotheses. First, female births are independent and follow the same law with bias P. So you have to think of this Galton board, but now the nails, where when you hit a nail, you go left and right, but with some bias. And we can compute the probability to get F female out of B births given the bias, which is just the binomial, so you can just simulate it with this biased Galton board. And the novelty introduced by Laplace was that the bias is follows a probabilistic distribution. So we can compute, thanks to the bias law, the probability distribution of P given the data, but there is this intractable integral here, and because we are computer scientists, we will use a model and compute things by simulation. So we describe our model, which is the number of female births given the parameter p. Then we describe our data, what we observed, and then we use this inference paradigm by sampling p, the parameter from a prior, by conditioning the outcome of this model with respect to the data, and by returning p. So we can then inference the parameter by using, for instance, the important sampling inference algorithm, which is perhaps one of the simplest ones. And the idea is to make some reinforcement and to weight parameters that gives you data that are close to the data that were observed. From the samples, from the weights, you can compute the approximated probability distribution. So you have to think to the operational semantics, again, as an array of samples of parameters, but now you add some weights on these parameters, and you compute the probability distribution according to this weight. This is the new operational semantics corresponding to this inference algorithm. So what is important to understand here is that there are lots of inference algorithms, and each algorithm comes with an operational semantics that describe how you compute this approximated distribution, you compute the samples, how you represent this approximated distribution. Okay, so now what is important is if I use this or this inference algorithm, I want to describe the same distribution. So how do I know that my implementation of this algorithm gives me the same inference? And for this, I need some formal tools. Okay, so now, as I told you, probabilistic programming languages are extension of usual programming languages. And programmers love functional programming. They are used to that. It's elegant, and you can do many. You can describe models, and so on. So. Ah, cool, there is the lambda. But what does it mean to have higher order function and with probabilities around? So at the, 5 years ago, I think, there were the first languages which were probabilistic with inference and so on, and which were functional with higher order. But we had no idea of what it means. Is it correct to compute, to evaluate with that? So that's why you need, guys, some semanticians. Okay. So, just a justification why it is useful to describe model and why we need some higher order. So it's a little example of regression. So you can also think of Vikash, the example of regression about programs. So here we have a set of an ensemble of points in R2, and we want to learn what are the best a function that approximates these points. Is it a polynomial? Is it a line or whatever? So what I can do is just to describe this problem using a distribution over functions. Okay. So now I want to do inference on function types. Okay. So what does it mean to have probabilistic higher order? We know that at first order, the measure semantics is sound. It's correct. But if we want to move to a higher order, we need a CCC. That means a Cartesian closed category. So why do we need a category? We need a category because types are interpreted as objects. That means sets with some more properties. And programs are interpreted as morphisms. That means kind of functions respecting the properties that you have put in your objects. Okay, so we need a category to be compositional and so on. We need this category to be Cartesian because we interpret context, the set of parameters, we interpret their types as a Cartesian product of the types. Okay? But we also need to be close. Closure means that there is a tight correspondence between evaluation. So the evaluation takes a program of type A to B, data of type A, and produce a data of type B. It applies this function to A. And the correspondence is between evaluation and curification. And curification transforms a function f with two parameters into a function of one parameter, which outcomes a function of the other parameter. Okay? So if you want the evaluation in a higher order program to be correct, you need this, all these ingredients. But there is this Oman theorem, which says that it's not possible to have the evaluation to be measurable if you take the measurable semantics. So this is what you read in any semantic paper about probabilistic programming. So I'm sure you want to see the proof. So let's go. Now, it's really an elegant proof that I really like to see this one. So, let's reason by contradiction and assume that we have y and z are just r with some measurable notion on it. So, we assume that if y and z are measurable sets, are measurable, then we can put a measurable measurability notion about the functions from y to z, from measurable functions from y to z. And we assume that eval, the evaluation, is measurable. And we will get a contradiction out of a diagonal process. Okay. So we consider this tight correspondence between the evaluation and the curification here of the diagonal function. So h takes two reals and computes one if x is equal to y and zero otherwise. Okay. First thing is to put some measurability on x and y. So x is r plus every part is measurable. And y is r, but we only consider countable or co-countable, that means that the complement is countable, parts are measurable, okay? Now, we need to put some measurability, some sigma algebra on x cross y, and we do it by the tensor. That means that the basic measurable sets are u cross v, where u is just a set and v is either countable or co-countable. It is a measurable set in this one. And we complement it by, we take the closure of these sets by complements, countable unions, and countable intersections. Okay. So, now, we remark that lambda h, the curified version of h, is well-defined. Indeed, we can just compute what it's doing. Now it's measurable. The first thing we need to understand is the image of lambda h, so lambda hx, is living in y to r. That means it's measurable from y to r. Okay, and we can just compute the inverse image of 1 and 0 and see that it's countable and co-countable. Okay? Now, lambda h is also measurable as lambda h minus 1 is just a set. That's why we took all the sets as measurable sets. Okay? Okay, so lambda h is measurable. Eval is measurable by assumption. Remember, by contradiction, we assume that eval is measurable. So, the composition of the two is measurable. Okay, so h, the diagonal, is measurable, and here there is a problem. And the problem is that the diagonal is not measurable in this measurable sigma algebra. So how do we prove that? We prove that it doesn't satisfy a property which is satisfied by all the measurable sets here. And the property is this one. You have if x, y are in W and y is not in Bn, then for any other z, x, z will be in W. So there is a contradiction because you go outside of the diagonal, but This property is satisfied by basic measurable sets and is stable by union, intersection, complement. So it's satisfied by every measurable set in here. So we have our contradiction by a diagonal argument. Okay? So what is the problem here? Why? What is the fundamental thing? Why it's not working here? It's because we have too many functions in the measurable sets. The problem is that lambda h is measurable. Okay, so we want to get rid of some measurable functions to have a model of probabilistic programming with higher order. Okay, so if we manage to have a model where we can interpret all programs, but we get rid of this diagonal, we are done. And that's what we did with, again, Michele Pagani and Thomas Erard, my colleagues. We described a semantics for higher order and continuous probabilistic programming, which is the measurable stable cones. So I will just give you some ideas of what is measurable cones. So it's what we wanted to do is to make a generalization of the probabilistic current space model, which was adapted for the discrete probabilities. And we wanted to our model for continuous probability to include this discrete probability model. Okay, so what we choose is the cones, which are CPOs with an order which is induced by addition and convex structure, which is useful for probabilities. So the objects are cones and measurable space, and the morphisms are stable and measurable functions. But we didn't start it with this notion. We started with just complete cones and Scott continuous function to be able to interpret recursion, fixed points, and so on. But we soon realized, or not so soon, realized that the category was Cartesian but not closed. So we had to do something, and we remarked that the old interpretation of programs are stable. By stable, we mean that they are hyperconvex function. So there is this notion which is kind of infinite Lipschitzness, but adapted to convexity. And if we restrict to the stable functions, then we get a Cartesian closed category. And all the programs that we have in such a language are interpreted by those functions. But you remember, for interpreting let x against sample something, we need to compute integrals, and for this we need measurability. So we add measurability by a kind of logical relation. We know what is measurability for reals. We know, and we transfer it from ground types to function types. Okay, so now we have our Cartesian closed category, but it's not the only, okay, we have some results on it, it's sound, it's adequate, and it's a conservative extension of probabilistic current spaces, yeah. But it's not the only one, there is also the quasi-Borel spaces. It's about the same idea, actually, but you have this set of outcomes that you can have, and you want to take the probability notion in Borel sets, in reals, and to transport it from a real to our set of outcome, which is X here. So you take X and a way to transform probability from R to X, which is the random elements. You add some properties on it so that everything is go well, and you ask your function to preserve this notion of randomness. Okay, so the idea behind are about the same. For measurability, we just force it by adding it from the reals. But the modalities are really different. It's about the same way to interpret programs, but because the types are different, the objects are different, the function behaves differently. Okay, so I just present you two, of course it is a Cartesian closed category and a conservative extension now of standard Borel spaces. So I described just two ways of solving this problem of how to interpret higher order probabilistic programming. The ideas are the same, about the same, but two ways of solving it. The idea is to get rid of the functions that we have and to force the measurability from measurability on real to raise it to a higher order. We can use these semantics to understand what is the meaning or to prove inference algorithms such as Metropolis Hastings. There are different ways, but here for stablecoins, what I will use is the operational semantics, the soundness, the invariance of the semantics, the adequacy that will imply the correctness. Okay, so this is the end. So if you want to take something home, is that semantics is useful for designing programming languages, but when you have designed them, it's not useful afterwards, meaning that we don't really use semantics in practice, or we use just very simple things in semantics. We've seen that in Joe's talk yesterday. He just needed to interpret his program, and then it was done. And so semantics, it's great tools to have inspiration, to have formal comprehension of the language, to see that it's correct, we have the right to design this language. And I think that it's not only for studying formal things, but also for designing programming languages. Thank you.